Hey guys, Chad here. Welcome to another edition of the Chad Shipley Show, where I bring you interesting, insightful, and or entertaining content or people. And today's show is one of my favorites to date because it is one of my new closest and best friends. I say new because we just met last year when we opened Sweat Bar Fitness, and his name is Matt Marshall. And the best way that I can think to describe him is just a really, really awesome person. He's the guy that everyone loves to be around. He puts you in a great mood. He makes you laugh. And when you work out with him, he pushes you harder than you could ever imagine. When Matt started with us back in January, he wasn't in such a great place mentally or physically, which we get into in the show. But he completely transformed himself and is now one of the iconic pillars of the Sweat Bar Fitness community. And when I say that everyone loves him, I don't mean that lightly. He literally is a breath of fresh air in any and every situation. Now, this show is one of my favorites because it's a lot of random conversation, but it's filled with so many gems. We get into some really awesome topics that I actually forgot about. We recorded this episode like 4 or 5 months ago, and I left just remembering or thinking that it was a fun show. But when I went back into it to edit it, recently, I was taken back by some of the insights and the gems that came out of it. Some of the wide-ranging topics include how he went from being a fat stooge, those are his words, Ironman competitions and the guy who did 50 straight in 50 days in 50 states, life obstacles, THC and CBD chews, Tony Robbins, his life-changing books, has-been athletes that are now insanely out of shape, hangovers in your late 30s and why they are so much worse than in your 20s, running on a treadmill at LA Fitness for 3 hours, 40-mile bike rides in search of water, marathon runs with bad training, fat adaptation, parenting, bad coaching, on and on and on. It starts out a tad slow, but it quickly gets into what was, for me at least, a very, very fun conversation. Matt is hard to find on social media, so if you ever want to meet him or see what this monster of a dude is like, you'll have to catch him at Sweat Bar Fitness or in some fitness competition, hopefully with me by his side. Without further ado, please enjoy this awesome conversation with the amazing Matt Marshall.
So I don't understand, is this stuff supposed to be good for you?
It's CBD.
So you just swallow it?
Yeah, it's ingested CBD.
American spice flavor, Canna Dips, Humboldt, California. 15 CBD infused pouches. Let's look at this. Dosing instructions. Insert one pouch between your cheek and gum, 10 milligrams of CBD. Swallow your saliva and keep pouch in your mouth. So it's a chew pouch. With no tobacco, all CBD.
You knew anything about CBD?
No.
Neither do I. The guy says 10 milligrams. I don't know if that's a lot, not a lot.
I know that, so there's a CBD store. Well, there's CBD stores everywhere now, but there's one that popped up saying it's the real CBD. I don't know what that means. Probably just like marketing stuff. But we went in there and there's like a spectrum and they show you like this big chart. And they talk about all their CBDs across the chart. My dad's in like major pain, so he's like on morphine, and we're trying to get him like off of the morphine. So we asked him for their strongest shit, you know? And the stuff they gave him was like nothing. Like it had did nothing to help his pain. Really? I took like a sip of it, and I was high as all. I wasn't high, but like I felt super relaxed because you don't get high off it. Because you know there's no TLC in it.
TLC. No scrubs. Go is chase the
waterfalls. THC.
Yeah, there's
no THC in it. I don't know, man. I'm not in the drug scene. But this stuff's really interesting.
You're in the 90s.
Like this would probably, if I took, yeah. But this stuff's really interesting. If I put one of these in right now, I bet you I would, I don't know. It's not high. I just get super relaxed.
I think that's what it's supposed to do.
Yeah.
Because I think people take, I don't know anything about it, but people take CBD to like help better them with like anxiety or different aches and pains. And yeah. I think it's good for inflammation, stuff like that. It's stuff that you probably can't see, maybe feel, I don't know.
But like the stuff that they gave my dad, it was just like in a droplet. So like you were taking droplets in your mouth. This is like chew. So all of the saliva that you get out of this, you're swallowing nonstop. I mean, I gotta imagine that this thing's like
tastes like Big Red. Yeah, that flavor. There's no nicotine. There's no tobacco. It's just CBD.
Nicotine free, tobacco free. I can't figure it out. I don't know if it's supposed to be healthy for you or not. I don't want to just take one.
Then don't.
Might not be able to drive home. People listen to this that are like, you know, big TLC lovers, THC lovers. They're making fun of us. Like, listen to these fitness dudes. These
idiots.
Talking about CBD chews. Anyway, man, what's going on? Where are you at with, how many times have you won the monthly championship so far?
Twice.
Two-time champion?
Yeah.
So this will be three if you win this month.
Right, because it'd be one more than the two that I've got, yeah.
I like my training partner now, man.
That's fun, man. It's a lot of fun.
You know what's funny about you? I was waiting to bring this up on the podcast.
Okay.
So, not that we're going to talk about fitness all the time, but I do think that this is a conversation worth getting into. Because when we show everyone the exercises, we walk them through it. I'm not saying that I'm not picking on any of our members. It's just human nature to seek, like, comfort, right? Like, to try to get away from the pain some way, somehow. So, I think for the majority of the exercises, people are immediately thinking like, oh, that's going to suck. How am I going to make that not so hard? And you, like every single exercise, there's not too many people that do this. I think you're trying to figure out how to make it harder every single time. Because even when we're working out together, you know, like I mean, that one day we were doing decline push-ups and you're looking for something high enough to put your feet up against.
Yeah.
And the rest of everyone else is like trying to do incline push-ups, do 10, stop, take a big break. And you're trying to make it harder. What's up with that, man?
I don't know. It's like I like to kind of challenge it a little bit more. I think that for sure whenever first opened place, which was the first time I had gotten into back in the fitness in 15 years maybe with some little shots here and there.
Yeah.
But basically I wasn't doing anything. And so certainly at the very beginning it was just like, all right, I always felt like my body could do stuff, but the reality of it after years of not doing anything, my body couldn't do what my brain thought it could. Yeah. So at the beginning it was like, my brain is gonna thinks it can do all this stuff that my body probably can't. Let's kind of like use that brain power to overcome the physical stuff. And so that's kind of the thought initially of just getting through some of the rounds and through the exercise was 100% of mind over matter. Like my body wouldn't stop for sure. And it was just like, you know,
yeah,
my brain not stopping, making like kind of forcing it. So now when some of the stuff I've gotten my body to a point where I can handle certain exercises, you know, the thought is, okay, I want to challenge a little bit more. Like the challenge of just doing it sometimes isn't always there. Wow, it's hard, but I want to like kind of push to the next level and see how far I can kind of, you know, go with it. And it's fun too, like, you know, working out together, working out nearby each other, like kind of like one station next to each other and some of the other members.
It's awesome and it sucks
and you really see, bad at well, the same time. You see like kind of like what others are doing. I'll see what somebody else is doing because they're doing the same thing. And I gotta at least do that.
Yeah.
I've been here after a workout and I've still been here at the studio while the next workout is happening. The next class is here. And I see somebody else adding a modification to make it more difficult. And like I'm kind of like pissed off, bummed out. I'm like, man, why didn't I could have did like I why did so I
you,
think of that?
Then you come back after work and then you do
it. It's like, why did I think exercise? Of that? I was bummed out. Yeah. And then, but you know, even today, for example, there was an exercise that the movement's simple enough, and I was just kind of it was the last one I did of the day, and I was just kind of just like doing it. But then I looked over and somebody else that was happened doing the same thing. I was watching her. She made a modification and made it harder. And I looked over and I was like, oh, okay, I like that.
Yeah.
And so that's what we did.
It's pretty crazy, man. The funny thing is, like, you think about how you're 37, right?
36.
36. So you think about 36-year-old, mid, nice, number one, 3 months running. Number one male, 3 months running, cracking a beer after his. How many workouts did he do? Is this just one?
Okay. Yeah.
But yeah, so like if you think about like high school I would put you up against any. Well, I'm sure there's a couple like top notch athletes out there. Not so much from like a speed. I mean, I know you're fast, but from an overall kind of endurance perspective. So we started back in January, right? So you weren't working out much before January, right?
No, not at all.
So take your fitness from January, and I think we could put you against any high school athlete for like longevity, endurance type training. I think you would break them. Because here's the thing, this happens, like as much as you push each other, there's also a mental thing happening with everyone. People can deny it, but I think it's always happening that if you're kind of going toe to toe with someone, one of two things are going to happen. They're going to break or you're going to break. So you're usually hoping that they'll break, right? And I think like you going up against some, you know, like high school athletes, football athletes, I think you would break them. Like I think that they would get to a point and be like, this dude is not going to stop. Like he's just going to keep going. They might go faster, but I think you're going to get longer and heavier
and yeah,
like nonstop. I don't know. What do you think?
I mean, I kind of thought about that a little bit actually. And I think if I take me now at 36 to where I think back when I was like 17, 18 as a high schooler, like my quote unquote prime, whatever that means, for someone that didn't do anything beyond that level, I think, half my life ago, 18 years old, I was probably stronger, for sure faster, much more flexible.
Then?
Mobile. Yeah.
Than now?
Yeah. But 18-year-old me was probably, for sure, was a way bigger pussy than 36-year-old.
Oh, yeah, mentally.
Mentally. And I think that's kind of, and a lot of it's like a maturing thing. And I've thought about that of, again, having like kind of like the mindset of, battling through the pain. And it's something that, I know for sure when I should have been like a peak athlete, like I mentally was soft as shit.
Oh yeah.
And
I've been a pussy my whole life.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah. Like physically I'm probably 10 times what I've ever been. Like I'm kind of like Benjamin Buttons. I think like I'm getting better as I get older physically. And finally, just within the last couple of years, I finally started to. I got so sick of the, like, being a mental pussy.
Right.
I don't know if that's the right word we should be using, but just mentally weak. Anxiety about everything. Did I say the right thing? Did I offend that person? You're very outgoing. I'm very outgoing. I'm a little bit more on edge than you are. Like, with the server the other day, I thought she was the rudest person.
Nice girl. She's doing her job.
She was such an asshole, man. I literally just wanted to get up and leave the restaurant. I'm like, Matt, is she not the biggest asshole? He's like, she seemed really nice to me. She's
very nice.
Yeah, she was nice. So I'm a little bit more on edge with people. You're just like kind of fun going and loving to everyone. But I'm still outgoing to people. So I'm always like, hey, how you doing? And talk to people. And then people like, they give you an attitude and you're like, what? Did I say something wrong? And now like since I've started like doing things that allowed me to strengthen myself mentally, I'm kind of like, I don't fuck you, I don't care about you.
Okay. Yeah. If they're truly giving you
Yeah.
business,
right?
Then yeah, it's just like, okay, whatever.
Yeah.
I feel like a lot of times, just in the waitress is a good example. I think it was something very harmless, innocent. There's
no, she was
no harm, no foul. And yeah, the way you just like kind of took it and heard it.
Yeah.
Was just like,
you can't turn this around on me, Matt. It's my show.
All right.
Yeah, I even brought it up to you. Like, she never even asked us how our meal was, if it was good. And when she came over and asked for beer, I was like, I'm not really sure. Can I get some recommendations on this style? And she's like, no, we don't have that.
Some people stink at their job. She might have stunk at her job. Maybe that's why you got the feeling as though you know.
So
it wasn't a personal thing. It was just that she wasn't that good of her job.
Let me ask you this.
Okay.
Likeability, to me, is the number one skill factor in any job across disciplines. So there's certain jobs that it doesn't matter, like a brain surgeon. To some extent, like if they're a fantastic brain surgeon, then obviously people are going to go to them no matter what.
So,
but the people that have to work with that brain surgeon, they could probably ruin those people's lives if they're just a fucking huge asshole all the time. To me, likability is everything. That girl, like, literally, her only job is for me to like her. And she was the rudest person. And it started with, like, me just asking her for some recommendations on beer, and she literally said, we don't have that, and just walked away from me. I'm like...
You also just took it upon yourself to just sit down.
I did not. I waited. I waited at the front forever, and they finally came and got me.
Okay.
Took me to the bar, then I waited for you, and then we ordered.
I thought you just sat down.
No, I didn't. No, because if I did, that would make me feel better, because I'd be like, then she has a reason to be, you know. So I'm the nicest person in the world, especially to servers. I even tip really, really well. I tipped her really well. But I was in there the other day, and I'm like, if she's serving, I'm not going in there. I'm walking away. Anyway, whatever, man. Did you watch 50-50-50 yet?
Yes.
The Cowboy.
Yeah.
Yeah, so... Tying it back to this whole, like, I like to ask myself questions all the time. Who are you? What do you want? What are you made out of? What's getting in the way? Why do you want it? So we'll come back to that 50-50-50 in a minute. But like, what do you think? Do you think about, like, your true limitations? Is there something that you have out there that you think would be a good test? Mentally, physically, that you'd like to potentially try. Like, mine's an Ironman's one of them. Like, that's kind of my, like, my long shot goal.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I brought up 50-50-50, because, you know, I for a while there, I was, like, convincing myself that I couldn't do an Ironman. I'm like, I'm getting old. And then I watched this documentary again. I'd seen it before. And this guy does 50 in a row. 50 days straight, like one day after you saw it.
He did, yeah, and wasn't it in 50 different states?
In 50 different states. Yeah, so there wasn't an Ironman happening. It was just him doing the distances in a different state 50 days in a row.
That's so wild.
50 Ironman. So in the first...
Imagine how exhausting just to travel. If you had a goal to just go visit a different state... 50 days straight, 50 days, you know what I mean?
It's insane.
That in itself is exhausting to think about.
He had his whole family. He's got like 5 kids.
Right, yeah.
The first day.
You can't travel to Erie without being like, oh my God.
Exactly.
You gotta get out of the car.
Yeah.
Like,
they had to start in Hawaii just because of the logistics. Then they got pulled over by the police because there was, I guess their vans fall on them. Like, they got complained on. But within the first 2 days, I think, so within 48 hours, he had already done 2 Ironmans. And he's on the couch, and they're trying to get his socks off, and he's shaking because he's, like, so bad.
Ugh.
They say it's worse at the beginning, and then it gets better because your body kind of goes into survival mode of some sort.
Yeah. I guess.
But I mean,
like I know.
Yeah, I mean, like, so let me look this up. Ironman distances. I forget what the swim's like 2-point-something miles.
So it's for sure, it's a marathon, right? The running part's a marathon.
Yeah, so it's a 2.4-mile swim, 112-mile bike ride. So just to put that in perspective, I think the average finish time for the bike is like 6 hours. So it's like 6 hours on a bike, riding 112 miles. And then you finish with a 26.2-mile marathon.
Yeah.
Like, basically a marathon. So you're running a marathon at the end. And there's a time cap. My buddy Dustin was just telling me about this today. There's a 16-hour time cap. So he actually told me, Dustin told me that some of the most inspiring people to watch are the ones that are coming in the 15th, 16th hour, because those are the people that, like, you didn't know if they were going to make it.
They went
through fucking hell and back. So you thinking an Ironman?
No.
Why not?
Now?
I mean, ever. He did 50 in a row.
All right.
And that's so like the age factor, right? So I was thinking, okay, we're the same age. So we're getting close to 40. And I'm talking myself out. I'm like, nah, you know, I like to think I'm a badass, but at the same time, you know, then you start working out and you're like, oh God, it hurts. So I ran, 4 miles, and then I biked 9 miles the other day. I could barely feel my legs today.
Really?
Yeah. Probably some of the working out too, but nowhere near like those distances, right? But I think about like this. So there was a guy named Dick. My buddy Dustin told me about this guy too. I had seen him before, but he at like 55 he started. Dustin told me he started at 55. He has a handicapped son that he takes with him through the Ironmans. So he pulls him in a boat. Swimming, the boat's strapped to him. And he pushes him when he's on the bike. Like, he's, like, riding on the bike in front of the bike.
Yeah.
And then when he's running the marathon, he's, like, pushing, like, a buggy in front of him for 26.2 miles.
Oh, my God.
So now Dick and – is it Hoyt? Oh, damn it. I'll have to look. But now I'm thinking, like, okay. And now
– what does – did he like kind of like what do you think that guy's motivation is at 55 decide to
I don't know
to
man.
Do that? I could see the component of depending on how old his son is and just speculating, but I could certainly see as a father myself like that he just wants to show his son, you know, it's kind of show his son like what can be done or just kind of like even to have even if it's because who knows, son sounds like he probably, you know, has some problems, but even if it's just like the high that you feel can feel when your kid looks at you and you're like and is so proud of you, your kid sees like, oh my God, my dad's on, like look at what my dad can do.
Oh yeah, for sure.
That could be a total addiction. You know, my two kids will come in here and hang out, you know, and they're not watching every second and everything that I'm doing. But it is a little bit of addicting. I don't like to bring them all the time unless I have to. But the way that they kind of like, you know, the way they look at you is kind of like, it's almost like addicting as a parent.
Yeah.
And, you know.
And we're going to come back to that. But Rick and Dick Hoyt and. Rick and Dick. So they have – it's Team Hoyt. They ran the Boston Marathon 37 times, which it's hard to
– that's wild.
Yeah.
You can't even get into that.
Yeah, it might be different for the push-assisted. But, so Team Hoyt became the first duo ever to compete in the Ironman World Championship in Kailua, Kona, Hawaii. Probably pronounced that wrong. 1989, repeated the feat in 1999. Over 3 decades, they have paved the way for the countless push assist teams. Rather, so anyway.
So now it's a thing because they did that in 99. It sounds like.
Yeah.
They paved the way.
Yeah.
That's wild.
So now there's this guy, right? And then I started reading Joe DeSano's book, The Spartan Way, and I'm hearing all the crazy shit and races
that's
he did.
That's the Spartan races.
The guy that created the Spartan races.
Yeah. Okay.
And then, yeah, I never knew he was like an ultra adventure athlete. Like, he doesn't call himself an athlete, but like give him any race in the world and he'll go fucking do it.
That makes sense why he would then.
It's crazy.
Yeah,
so he started like the first, he used to work on Wall Street, and I'm reading his book and it starts out with, I love it because it was the foreword of the book and it just gets right into this race that is like 36 hours. It's in somewhere way north in the Arctic, like 35 below temperatures. It's a 6-day race and it's just like
in the Arctic.
Yeah, it's somewhere cool. Up there, like, yeah, really really cool, like 30 negative 30 temperature. And they got to a point where the team in front of them, so they were in second, team in front of them, something happened with the ropes, they were rappelling off a cliff, he's hallucinating at this point.
Yeah.
And they realized they weren't going to be able to get down the mountain before nightfall, and they didn't bring a tent because they thought it'd just be extra weight. They didn't plan on sleeping for 6 days. So now he's burying
as it. Part of the race, they're not going to sleep for 6 days.
Yeah, so basically just race for 6 days straight, try to win.
Awesome.
Which I just started watching The World's Toughest Race on Prime. It's kind of like.
Is it good?
Show. Yeah.
I haven't watched it.
It's crazy. Anyway, okay. that guy, the 50.
Is that like a, is it like it. A show, though? Like a reality
show? Yeah, it's a series. Okay. Yeah, it's a series. But it's not as like, it's, you know, Survivor's kind of like dramified. Like, yeah. This is just like people fucking trying okay. to like race, you okay. know? That guy's in it. 50-50-50 is in The World's Toughest Race. James What's Lawrence. His name?
James Lawrence. Yeah.
So anyway, Joe DeSantis is like, he's burying himself in the snow that night because he's trying to just get out of the windshield, you know, like.
He doesn't have a tent.
Yeah, so he's sleeping in the snow. And he didn't sleep because it was so freezing. I'm thinking, like, how can someone endure that kind of pain? And now I'm listening to David Blaine.
Dave Blaine could. I was about to say, Dave Blaine could.
he like, sat in an ice cube in New York City for 66 dude, hours some of those straight. Stunts,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Went 44 days without anything but water.
He talked about just the training, like, getting his heart rate to go down. He's yeah. talking like when he was in there. Do you remember what he said? It was like it's something like 10 heartbeats
yeah,
a minute.
He got down to like 10 heartbeats a minute.
That's wild.
It's insane. Trying to like train himself to
right.
Yeah. So I see all these people doing this crazy stuff, and I'm like, man, I got to be able to at least do an Ironman. I'm at the point now mentally where I'm thinking like, if I do an Ironman, is that even enough? But now I know, like, if I'm in the middle of the race, I'm like, yeah, this is enough.
Just yeah.
try to get through this.
Yeah.
I'm going to be tough. I'm looking for a bike. I'm going to start training.
You've done other stuff, though, right?
Like, marathon.
yeah, yeah. I mean, it's still, it. That's...
Yeah, marathon was... The thing is... So my favorite quote of all time, one of my favorite quotes of all time, is that you don't rise to the level of your expectations. You follow the level of your training. The reason I love that quote is because I am a person that in my head thinks I can do everything until the rubber meets the road. And I'm like, God, this is really hard. So I didn't train for the marathon
yeah.
the right way at all.
Yeah.
And I just went and ran it. And I hated running to begin with. So I learned that training has got to be like an integral part. Like right. I didn't do David Goggins style, like just go and run 100 miles. But for me, that was enough to kind of say, okay, like, you got to really start thinking from everything. Like, I bought the shoes I ran the marathon in, I bought the night before the marathon, which is a really bad idea.
Okay.
Like, anyone that's ever ran anything, people who run 5Ks know that you shouldn't run a 5K in brand new shoes. I ran a marathon in brand new shoes that I'd never even walked on.
Yeah.
You know? Because... Yeah, like, there's a lot of reasons, but
did you go to, like, one of those running stores and have somebody fit your foot and actually, like, do it in that way? I've never done it.
I did, even but know I what think it's about. Kind of a sham. They're basically looking at whether you walk, at least this is what the woman told me, that they're looking at whether you walk on the outside of your foot or on the inside of your foot.
Where do you walk?
There's shoes on the outside. There's shoes that are supposedly built with more support on the outside versus more support on the inside. Based on how you walk.
That's it?
That's the extent of
nothing with the arch, nothing with the width of your foot?
I mean, I'm sure that it probably could get that sophisticated. Like, riding a bike, my friend today, because I'm trying to buy a bike now, he's like, look, this isn't just like go buy a bike that's like, you know, adjust the seat height to your level. He's like, there's a ton of geometry in this. They literally have to measure you up and down, be able to get on a bike mm-hmm. that fits you perfect.
Boy, that's a lot of effort.
Well, I laugh because, you know, you look at David Goggins, he did the Ultra Ironman, which is two Ironmans in a row. And he didn't even have his own bike. He used his buddy's bike, and then he wrecked it.
That's how I feel like I would go.
Yeah.
Like you too. From yeah. just what we've talked about and some of the things is... Yeah. And it's hilarious at that with that quote that huffy. Is somehow your favorite...
Yeah.
Because when I walked in here the other day, and you probably live, what, six miles, there's hills?
It's four.
Four?
Yeah, four and a half, because it was 9 mile bike ride down and back, yeah.
Okay, so 9 miles. Yeah. But even here, you're like, yeah, I rode my bike, I rode however many miles you ran.
Yeah.
And just being around you, and we talk about this stuff, I know that that's the first that you've gone, like, that you've run for a distance or biked for a distance probably in a while, right?
Well, I ran 10 and a half the other day.
But just like starting, like you hadn't been doing like those distance things.
Oh, no.
For a
while. Yeah, just out of nowhere.
And it's just out of nowhere.
Well, the 10 and a half was out of nowhere.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Okay, so that one. So you just you just decide one day, all right, I'm going to go. We'll see how far it makes it. Yeah. I'm the same way.
Yeah. Just figure out how far we can run.
Yeah, see what happens.
Until you're broke.
Yeah.
On the street. Yeah. I mean, it's a bad mentality.
It's some extent. I know, which is why it's hilarious, yeah. I think, that that's your favorite quote. Like, when did it become your favorite quote? Has it been that way for a while? Because I'm the same way in that I've done, which eventually will lead to my kind of reasoning behind, I'm probably not going to try an Ironman. Because
you will. You should.
I'd do an Ironman if I thought I could just roll out of bed and go do it, because I'm not interested in, because I hate running like you.
Yeah.
I don't know. At least not right now.
So what is the why then? Is it, I know, let's talk about your kids doing exercises now. Is that a big thing? Like the kids seeing
it became,
you
it wasn't the initial.
Yeah.
Like there's been.
All right, let's take a step back. What was the initial? So why did Matt say, okay, like fuck this, I'm just going to start working out like a madman and win all the sweat bar months? You and Jared, I think, are the only males that have won. So what was the switch? What went off in Matt's head?
So, I mean, there was like a lead up to, because you opened in what, like December, January, right?
Yeah.
And
January.
You know, I living nearby, and a couple of mutual friends that, you know, told me about you. At that time, it was in the fall, and I was just like, all right, here we go. And kind of like what led to that was, you know, over the last couple of years of my life, there's been some things that have happened, and I kind of went through this process of becoming mentally tough. Just generally. Just trying to, how can I, like, I had to overcome.
Because of life stuff.
Of kind of like looking in the mirror, and what we talked about earlier, just kind of like, boy, like, you are a mental pussy.
Yeah.
You know? And I had no choice, but it was like a sink or swim type thing with some things in life that I had no choice but to become mentally tough. And at that time, I stumbled into, you mentioned Goggins, I stumbled into David Goggins, stumbled in, like, kind of started reading a couple other things here and there of just like what it takes. And they're talking about doing physical athletic things, which in my head, even though I hadn't done anything physical for a while, I related to. And I was always drawn to that, and then just applied the mentality to what I was happening in life. And then last fall, I was like, okay, like, we got out of this hole. It's been a while. We did it, mentally tough enough. By the way, you're like a fat stooge now. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
In your head, and a lot of these things that inspired me to become mentally tough were for, like, you know, fitness related, athletic related. And it's always, it's never like any kind of like self-help type books, articles, anything like that. It's always hearing like biographical stories, autobiographical, but biographical. And I was always drawn to, so talk about Goggins, this guy doing all these amazing physical feats, being a Navy SEALs, things like that.
Yeah.
You talk about other, you know, like fighters. Like, I like wrestling. Talk about wrestlers, like those guys is like kind of silly as it may be, but those guys, the career that they've gone and to get to where they got to these top levels, they've done the same stuff. Yeah. They had to be mentally tough. They had to grind it out. And that can apply in so many different ways, but I was always drawn to like things that were athletic,
yeah,
fitness related. And I'd never liked the idea of like a big box gym, mainly because I felt like physically, like I didn't belong there, in that like I don't even know where to start, what to do.
Yeah, right.
You know,
I think a lot of people are like I don't know why.
Like, I was super intimidated, and almost like I felt like I don't even, like, I'm gonna go in there and embarrass myself because I don't know what to do.
Yeah.
And I know how out of shape I am,
right?
So that's why I always lean toward the at-home stuff, and the at-home stuff just wasn't working. I'm trying to do it by myself, and I wanted, like, I just didn't have that motivation. And it got to a point in last fall, which was like, all right, man, like, you know, you've overcome a lot. You got mentally strong. You know, you want to do these things. Like, you feel like you should be able to do these things. but you can't. And like, I just had like no good starting point.
Yeah.
And that led to just, you know, when you opened a studio, I didn't know you for anything. Some mutual friends.
Yeah.
And it was just like when I was told this, my buddy's opening a gym, I didn't know what I was walking into. Quite honestly, I didn't care. I was just like, but I was just like, I remember sitting eating a burrito at Moe's with my buddy Brent. And I don't know if he recalls this conversation, but he told me, hey, my buddy's opening a studio down the street, you know, and this is back in like August or September.
Yeah.
And I remember like, I was just kind of like, okay, I guess this is what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
And then I just kind of like hung out, waited. Another friend told me something when you're actually opening. And I just showed up and I was like, cool, this is what I'm going to do. And it turns out I really liked it, with the number one thing being the reason I didn't want to go to a box gym is because I didn't know what to do, how to do it.
Yeah.
I don't have to think when I walk in here.
Right. Yeah.
So
next thing you know, you're competing with the big dogs. You and Jared going head to head.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but it's easy because you, like, I don't have to think and I don't want to think.
Yeah.
I want you to just show me how to do it and I'll do my best to do it.
That's what I wanted. That's why I created it.
Really?
I just wanted to go somewhere I could get my ass kicked. Like, literally, so I went somewhere, right? I went to a place that does something similar, right? They set up the class structure and it was a good class. And then after, I said, well, when can I come back? And they didn't have very many class times. So I got kind of frustrated because I'm just like, I just want to go somewhere. Well, they wanted me to come back and see a personal trainer. I'm like, I don't want to see a personal trainer. I just want to come in, have you guys kick my butt, and then leave. Kind of like a boot camp, right? Joe DeSana talks a lot about this. Like, we have this boot camp coming up. This whole thing about, like, just take me somewhere out of my comfort zone, out of my element, challenge me, and then, you know, let me see how I can do. That's why all these Spartan races are doing so well now. And, you know, like, it's just getting people off the couch, giving them a life experience. I wanted that on a daily basis, but I wanted it in a gym. So when we didn't really find anything that was out there like what we wanted, we kind of said, let's just go create that, right? So it's an experience every time. You're like, it's challenging.
So you, I know you've talked about this, but you were looking for something for yourself.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%.
Had a vision of what you wanted, couldn't find it.
Yeah.
Okay, let's go open a business.
Yeah, let's just open it. Yeah, I mean, and not, I mean, to be fair, there are, it's not like we invented group fitness. There's stuff out there like CrossFit. I love watching CrossFit. I wanted more functional movements. I wanted a lot of cardio built in with strength conditioning, but not the heavy Olympic lifting right off the bat. And I don't think it's I mean, as popular as CrossFit is, it is not something a lot of, like, everyday people should just start doing.
Mm-hmm.
CrossFitters might argue with me on that and say, like, no, we can take you as a beginner. We put you through classes. We teach you. We give you all the mobility and all that. Sure. Like, yeah, you could take anyone and train them on anything. But it's I would argue that the majority of people that are not super into fitness are way better off coming to a place like us. I'm not trying to sell us, but because we're doing functional movements, right? Like, not crazy stuff. And we're just going to give people a really awesome workout. So for me, like, my thing is I've learned that I have to be growing. Like Tony Robbins always says, if you're not growing, you're dying. Like, literally, you need self-growth.
That dude's wild, by the way. Yeah. I watched, just like last week, I watched the thing he has on Netflix.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'm not your guru.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know much about him other than his name and that he's like.
Oh, really?
I've never paid any attention to anything.
No kidding.
So I watched I'm Not Your Guru the other day.
Yeah.
That dude's nuts.
I'll go on a Tony spiel real quick then, because so when I first started getting into books, his book, Awaken the Giant Within, was probably the first book I ever read, like, since high school, where they made me read books, you know. It's the first book I ever read like on my own will, and it like hit me hard. I'm like, just the name of it, Awaken the Giant Within, right? So it's a lot of like, let's like self-empowerment kind of stuff. And the way he writes is, it just like fires me up. I love the way Tony Robbins writes. I love it. Like, it's just, he's one of my favorite authors. I don't even know if it's him that's writing it or if he's just like the ghost, you know, if he's a ghostwriter or whatever. But his books are awesome. So I like, and he would talk about what he was and then what he became, and, you know, he's got, and it just gave me a vision of like a life that I wanted. That I never was really thinking about it. Vision's everything. The way you think is, you know, like, if you.
Oh, that's the hook.
Yeah.
Well, there's lots of people that paid $5,000 a piece to that feeling. What's his convention called?
There's two. So there's, well, there's a couple. So there's Date with Destiny, which is
the one that they once document. A year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They never like film crews in there, like cameras. That a ticket to that event is actually like $8,000 to $10,000.
And they push.
And then there's Unleash the Power Within.
Okay.
UPW. Yeah. Which is crazy because COVID right now, there's videos, you can see this. He's actually in a room with like hundreds of TVs on walls surrounding him. It's virtual.
He's the Vince McMahon of...
Yeah, it's crazy.
of motivational speaking.
And then his book, Money Master the Game, probably the best financial book ever. Like, if you're looking to learn anything about financial investing, that book is phenomenal. So anyway, I don't even know where I was at when I started talking about this. Do you?
No.
How do we even get on Tony Robbins? Whatever. Oh, self-growth. Yeah.
There you go.
If you're not growing, you're dying. Right? So he always says that. And for me, to grow, you need to challenge yourself. To challenge yourself, the best way to challenge yourself is to do fitness. You know, like, this is the best way I know for me to challenge myself. It's kind of like a foundation to everything else. So, like, fitness is one of the things that you can do that's going to impact, like, every area of your life. Relationships get better. Your energy gets better. Mm-hmm. Your confidence gets better. Your performance gets better in many aspects. Like, you just start becoming a better person. So, to me, like, when I'm feeling sluggish and I don't have energy to play with my daughter and, you know, I'm waking up hungover, trying to go into work, you know, like, when I start integrating fitness into my life, you know, racquetball is kind of like this for me. Like, I always tell people you should have a hobby too, because racquetball took away, like, drinking, because I wanted to get up at 5 a.m. and play racquetball, which made me not want to drink the night before, right? So the same thing with fitness. So when you start integrating that, that's why people say it's a lifestyle. Like, when you start integrating healthy eating and fitness into your life and you start to enjoy the benefits of that, it just impacts every other area. And, you know, like, so you were talking about, you know, you were a high school athlete and, you know, then life happens and you went through some stuff, you know, that got you into a mentally tough position, but you're still like kind of lost yourself physically, which I think is so, like, so many people that happens to, right? There's so many high school athletes that are like the has-beens, right? That now they're so out of shape. I mean, I know so many people that were like the high school sports stars.
Mm-hmm.
They're in the worst shape ever. Literally, like, just in terrible shape.
Well, you see that. You see guys even...
I can't figure out why.
Well, I mean, you see guys
like, the glory days are over.
Yeah, like, even professional athletes. There's guys that are walking around...
But the glory days are over.
That were once, like... Yeah, right. Like, you see guys that, like, say they boxed at, you know, 160 pounds. I don't know who I can name, maybe. But then... You know, and they were not even just beyond high school, they were professional athletes. That's what they did. They made millions and millions of dollars. And then as you see them as old men or women, I'm talking about men, certain ones, you know what I mean? Like they're just like, they're like, oh my God, that's the same person?
Yeah.
Guy's a mess.
Yeah.
You know?
But what, I can't figure it out. Like, it's like this mentality that the best days of your life are over. That's what I can't figure out, because to me, I look at the future as the best days of my life to come.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when I'm going to have money, fulfillment, I'm spending my time with all the people I want to be spending with. Like, even crossing races now and having my daughter see me cross the finish line. Like, we were talking about with your kids. They see you work out now. They're working out at home and they're doing exercises, like, just on their own. Having my daughter tell me she thinks I'm a badass, you know. Asking her, she, like, asked me to see my muscles. I don't even have muscles. She's asked me to see my muscles. Like, show me your muscles. You know, like, that kind of stuff is what, like, that's way better to me than, like, a crowd full of cheering fans during, like, a high school. Not to downplay the high school sports, but I'm, like, thinking, like, how do you, and I get it, life happens, you have kids, and it gets tough, but, and it happened to me, too, but at some point, I have to believe that everyone just wants to, do the switch like you did. Like, you basically came to a conclusion where you said, like, I'm going to sit on my couch and drink beer every night and be an asshole, or I'm going to, like, and maybe you didn't say that, but basically you're not going to get into shape, or you are going to get into shape.
Right.
You're going to take control of it. And I don't know. Like I don't know why it's such a struggle for people to say, yes, I'm going to integrate fitness into my life and I'm going to stop being a...
So one of the unexpected things for me, for sure, is it 100% started as a physical thing.
Yeah.
Right? It was a physical thing that I just, like, that was, like, I mean, for years, it had been something that bothered me. You know, I...
Like the way you looked or the way you felt?
Both.
Yeah.
Both. I remember I had a conversation with someone who... This is, you know, 10 years ago. I'm in my late 20s, right?
Yeah.
The same size forever. I was the same, you know, just same size. Like, nothing changed. I was in my late 20s and was still, I could, you know, I didn't really do anything, like, physically, but I was remaining the same size. And it was, like, 175 pounds, something like that. Guy's about 10 years older than me, family member. He says to me, he's laughing at me. He's like, wait till you get to my age. And he, at that time, was getting into fitness at the time. I wasn't. He was. And he was just like, wait till you get to my age. He's like, I'm telling you, it's going to start falling apart. So at that time, he's probably in his late 30s. And the switch flipped for him at that time, too. And I remember distinctly thinking, this is why it sticks out to me, is that I was just like, nah, man, I'm 175 pounds. I can do what I want. I got good metabolism. I'll be fine. And I kind of had that, like, arrogant mentality until all of a sudden, you know, I was almost to that point of life. And I was like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
Like... it wasn't like, yeah, and it was just like, you know, because of how I was living my life, like, holy shit, like, here I am, not even to the age that he was, and I'm like, he was right,
yeah,
just because of, you know, the way life happens. And so,
you know what Maddie told me the other day?
No.
Like, the digestion of alcohol between, like, a 21-year-old and a 37-year-old is like I don't know, your body can process it within hours when you're, like, I don't know the actual numbers and stats, but it's a lot faster,
really,
for your body to be able to just, like, get the alcohol out of your system. But when you're, like, 37, it's, like, five times as long,
really,
or something like that. Yeah, that's why we get hangovers so bad after, like, six pack.
Yeah,
it's pressing.
It's good old days. Glory days. Yeah.
Same thing, man.
Glory days, man. But what started, like...
We fall to the level of our training.
Yeah, that guy's full of shit. What started as, like a physical thing for me, like, feeling like garbage, just knowing that I couldn't do what my head thought I should be able to do, but physically, it was just, like, not a chance. But... my confidence, having the confidence to and that, then I think that's what spreads to all those different things you were talking about earlier. Like, if you have just a personal confidence,
yeah,
it helps with relationships, it helps with the way you approach every day, it helps with, you know, all the things that just, like, just your overall attitude.
100%.
That, I think, like, you know, to what you said of, you know, for you, just how fitness ends up being, like, kind of like the link to a lot of things.
Oh, yeah.
I think, you know, you can be good at many, many different things, but if you're walking around and you're not physically confident, that's one of the biggest things, probably.
And likability.
There is.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. So.
Our waitress was low on confidence and likability.
Well, she's...
Yeah, I think, and this is actually an important topic because... So if you think about positive reinforcement versus negative reinforcement, right? And people will probably, like, make fun of me if they haven't already about my TLC. These patches are pretty good, by the way. I put one in at the
beginning. Did you?
Yeah. They taste really good. I'm hoping it's, like, just CBD oil and it's...
water.
Huh. Yeah, no THC. Anyway. So positive reinforcement versus negative reinforcement. I, as a child, never responded well to negative reinforcement. Meaning, like... you know, coaches scream, especially the coaches, like, that was another thing. It's big with me here that I bring into the studio. I cannot stand coaches that are out of shape trying to teach athletics.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I mean, it's one thing if you're a mastermind, you're really good at play calling and you're good at building relationships with the kids. But when you're out there screaming to go harder and go faster, yet you were physically a, like, just complete, like,
yeah,
pug your whole life. You couldn't do shit yourself. it's like you just want to be the guy that screams at people, you know? Yeah. So even with parents, I always tell parents, like, don't sit on the bleachers and tell your kids that they can be anything. Like, show them. That's why you get mad. Like, go run a goddamn race.
Dude, I think that from a parenting standpoint, that's beyond any athletic thing. That's just, like, walking around the house, yeah, playing with the kids.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you walk through the grocery store. You walk through the grocery store, and this is just, I don't want to be on like a soapbox here, but you walk through a grocery store, and when you see, I see how parents interact with their kids, it's just like on my radar.
Yeah.
And when you see the way, I don't know, you see the way that a parent maybe just like yells at their kid for no, like something that's not necessary. It's just like, man, like, what are we doing here? You're not even trying. You're just yelling.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
But anyway. Yeah.
No, I mean, the whole, like, you know, you're bad, you're stupid, you're not good enough, you know, how in the world did you drop that? Like, all of the negative, I never responded well to that. Maybe it works, maybe there's science behind it, I don't know. For me, it doesn't work. Because if you can explain to me where I did things wrong and help me understand how to get better, I'll improve. But when you tell me when I did things well, so that's my big thing, even in corporate America, for managers, always make sure that you're like letting the people under you know the things that they're doing really, really well at, right? And to give them that confidence to build that up, because like you said, when people have confidence, they're going to perform 10 times better.
Right.
When you know, a lot of managers they don't want to give them confidence because then they think that they can take their job and all, like, it's just nonsense. I think you have to really spend a lot of time building people up all the time, you know. And that's a big thing here, you know. I am just walking around talking to people, but I'm also trying to tell them, like, look, you can do this, you know. Last week you couldn't do it for 10 seconds, now you're doing it for 20 seconds. You know, those are huge accomplishments, huge.
Yeah.
Even being a parent, going out and running a 5K is a monumental accomplishment, you know, because now you're putting yourself out there and showing, you know, yourself and your kids that you can go do something, you know, put your mind to it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I'm not getting in a parenting shame box here, but I we always talk about don't be mediocre, don't be average. What I mean by that is when everyone else would just not run a race, be the person that says, I'll run the race. Yeah. Or when, you know, instead of sitting there on the couch every night and, you know, letting your kid play on the iPad, just take them out and do something with them.
Right.
You know, that's being a little bit better than average.
I think, like, that approach and just, like, in dealing with people in whatever aspect, whether it is in the corporate world or as a parent, or just to kind of apply it to, you know, the gym as a coach here, like you said, if somebody does something for 10 seconds this week and 20 seconds next week, I can guarantee you that person knows. Person knows.
Yeah, for sure.
Like,
yeah,
they know that, like, oh shit, like, I couldn't do this 2 weeks ago. I did it for 10 seconds last week and 20 this week. Not now, in taking that approach as a coach and being like, it's almost like the response of a little kid. Like, I think, like, everybody still has that mentality,
yeah,
of like, oh, Chad saw that. Chad knows.
Yeah.
Chad noticed.
Right.
And that's important for you to know too, yeah, is that when, and I think you do, but to know, like, not only are you just like encouraging somebody, yeah, for, like, to you might just be like, hey, that's awesome, you did that much more. That person, yeah, that could mean everything.
Right.
Because they know it. They're proud of themselves and they're like, oh, he yeah, thinks so. Like, he saw it. He knows.
Yeah, exactly. So just in that example, right?
And then there's like, then the next week,
yeah,
all right, I did 20. I'm going to show Chad. Right. I can do 30 this week.
You, yeah, know what, but I mean? That only works when you're giving positive reinforcement.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm just like, so it's so important.
If you think about it, like, in that example, right? So say we're just having someone do an exercise, like planks, right? And if you think about, like, a bunch of kids playing football and the coaches say, do planks for 40 seconds. It's like, hey, Johnny can't do a plank. Like, what's wrong with you, Johnny? Why can't you do a plank for 40 seconds? Say he did it for 10 seconds, right? Next week, Johnny tries a little harder. He does it for 20 seconds. There's two ways to approach that. You either paid attention that they did it longer than last time. You say, hey,
yeah, exactly,
you did a good job. You held it for 10 seconds longer. Or you come back to the kid and say, you're still not good enough. You didn't hold it for 40. So the mental thing going on in their head is,
I'll never,
Yeah, yeah.
Like, no matter how hard
yeah,
I try.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm still not good enough. I'm doing terrible. I did shit. But you didn't. You actually did 100% better, yeah. right, than you did last week. And that's the kind of stuff that if you were to, like, reinforce it is, hey, you did a lot better than you did last week. Keep pushing, keep pushing, keep pushing. Then it becomes much easier to hit the 40 because there's actually a book that talks about this. I can't remember any of my damn references. Anyway, oh, it's called The Rise of Superman, which basically talks about how to, like, increase massive performance. And it talks about the – you basically have to give yourself a challenge, but the challenge has to be, like, in the perfect center of – not overly difficult to the point where you can't do it, but not so easy that it's mundane. You have to get into, like, the perfect challenge that's going to get you into, like, a good flow state. They talk about a lot about flow. So, for example, you know, you don't want to just set out and say, I'm going to go run 26.2 miles because you'll get 6 miles and say, I'll never be able to run a marathon, right?
Did you do that?
I was close to doing that.
Okay.
But you want to give yourself a challenge that, like, is not so easy. That so when I first started getting into running, long story short, I ran 6 miles once in my life when I was like 22. Besides that, I never ran further than 2 miles. Saw a thing about a Spartan race. I knew it was about 4 miles for the sprint. So I'm like, I got to be able to run 4 miles. So I started running 4 miles. Then one day on the beach, I'm like, I'm going to run until I don't feel like running anymore. Ended up being like 11 miles, right? So now I'm starting to get a gauge. Then when I start, like, really asking myself, okay, let's challenge yourself today. Then it was the 14 or 15 mile mark, mm-hmm. right? I'm in an LA Fitness. I'm on the treadmill for 2.5-3 hours.
That sounds awful.
People have come in after I'm on the treadmill. They go get changed. They work out. They leave.
Yeah.
Then new people come in, go get changed, they go work out, they go get a shower, they get changed, then they leave. Then new people come in.
So that actually just got me thinking of something.
What?
Just that when, you know, anytime I've done like, and I haven't done long runs or long bike rides in a while or anything like that for any distance, but there is a point when, you know, the beginning stages suck. And it's just like, man, all right, when am I going to be done? When am I going to be done?
Well, then you get into a flow state.
And then you get into that state of, I'm just going to keep going.
Yeah.
Like, there's, like, this, like, now I got a story. Right. Now I have something that, you know, to talk
for sure.
about. Like,
yeah.
I'm going to keep going.
100%.
And you have a number in your head. Well, maybe I'll bike for 10 miles today. I'll go five out, five back. You get the five, and you're like, shit, I still feel good.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to keep going.
100%.
That took me on a 40-mile bike ride one day.
Yeah.
And
you rode 40 miles?
It was out of nowhere.
And that's good.
Well, so, okay, I could sit here and be like, yeah, Chad, I set out to do 40 miles. It was 20 miles out, 20 miles back. I knew it was going to take a long time, but that's what I wanted to do, and I was just had something to prove that day.
Yeah.
No, dude, I couldn't find water.
He's in search of water. He's on the trail looking for water.
I'd never been on this trail, and especially at least not to the places I was going. And I thought in my head that it was going to take me to a spot on the Montour Trail where there was like, there had to be like a crossroads somewhere.
Yeah, you'd think.
That there'd be a gas station nearby.
Or a water fountain.
Or, because, you know, and that was the thing. I set out with no water.
Right.
I didn't plan on riding as long as I did. It finally got to a point where I'm 20 miles out and like the only water around me are like people's swimming pools in Fort Cherry. like I'm out there and I'm like debating, like, I mean, where am I at physically? Like, am I have to just like make a friend here and ask if I can jump in their pool and drink some of their pool water? Everybody's gonna do it. Like,
they'd probably just give you like a hose at that point, or maybe bring you a cup of water.
At that time, I was like, I gotta go and sneak in this person's backyard and drink water out of their pool. Could have called like Uber
Eats, meet you on your bike.
This is
can you go pick me up a water from Sheets?
And my battery on my phone was dying, which whatever. But it was just like by the time I got back, I think my battery did die.
Yeah,
and I think there was even a point at one time when
So this comes back to the training, right?
Training, but anyway. Yeah.
But think about if you were actually equipped, like where you had done a few rides up to that and then got yourself thinking about it a little bit more structured mentally and then prepared by actually bringing water.
Yeah.
And eating carbs the night before and carb loading. So the night before my marathon, I was talking to Andrew Wade, the dietitian.
Yeah.
And he sends me a script out of his book. He wrote a book called The Marathon Runner's Guide. Basically, how to, like, meal prep, right? Like, for – it's a lot of stuff for nutrition. It's the nutrition aspects of the running, right?
Okay.
So he'd asked me, like, are you carb loading or are you fat adapted? And I'm like, probably carb loading. He's like, well – if you're still eating carbs, then you have to carb load at this point because you don't have time to get fat adapted. So what he told me was if you're fat adapted, you know, fat adapted people can run 300 miles before they have to refuel. That's why a lot of, like, you know, high caliber elite athletes.
I don't even know what that means. What's fat?
So basically your body has switched its fuel source from glucose or sugar to burn fat. So this is the whole idea. And I know that fat adapted and keto are different or whatever, but the whole thing behind the ketogenic diet is that you basically go through a state of ketosis where your body stops using sugar as its fuel source or carbs.
Mm-hmm.
So there's simple sugars and complex sugars and all that. Like, but it gets kind of complex. But in essence, the human body is made to run off of carbohydrates, which is your fuel source. But there are certain conditions that the ketogenic diet started being prescribed for. So they would take carbs out of the diet completely. The person goes through a state of ketosis, which switches, like, literally in the brain switches and starts burning fat as its fuel source. So now your body starts to eat itself, right? Like, that's why people that are going on ketogenic diets are just, like, losing tons of weight.
Right.
They lose all the fat.
Okay.
Right. My friend Steve Mann, he's a Spartan race. He used to do Spartan races pretty, like, competitively. And now he was working for them for a while. And he's even designing courses now, not for Spartan, but he's designing, like, obstacle courses. He's lived forever in a fat-adapted state. Like, he's been in years. So he could go days. He actually ran a beast. The Spartan Beast, which is like, I don't know, 14, 15 miles or something like that, without having anything to eat for like 4 days. So he just drank water with some salt to give him like the minerals and the electrolytes, yeah. And he did this race. And there's a lot of people like that. You know, there's people that do 5 days and they'll go lifting, deadlifting. And Andrew even said that, you know, if you're an elite athlete and you're fat adapted, you can run 300 miles.
But getting fat adapted isn't like an overnight thing.
It's a process. I think where I get concerned when people start telling me they're on a ketogenic diet, one, if you're just doing it because you saw someone lose a lot of weight and you're just going to try it out, you should probably speak to someone like Andrew, a dietitian, can actually look at your body, take the right test, and make sure that is a good diet for you to be on, because it's a massive lifestyle change. It is super hard just to cut out carbs. I mean, you start removing carbs completely from your – so this is where I get scared. This is the second reason I get scared. One, I don't think people fundamentally understand what they're doing. So I think it's important for them to be well-educated versus some multi-level marketing, you know, let's just start giving you ketogenic diet, you know, whatever. I think people need to really understand what they're doing to their body. Two, if you don't actually get into a state of ketosis and start burning fat, your body will try to use protein as its fuel source, which is bad, right? Because protein's for the muscles. So you actually didn't switch over because you're still getting a little bit of carbs. So if you're in a state of ketosis and you drink like a Coke, it's going to kick you out of ketosis.
Right.
Or anything. You eat a piece of bread, it'll probably kick you out, right? Because, like, now your body's going to use that, and it's going to start burning that as a fuel source again. So, I don't know. There's, there's so much information out there about it. Whatever. But for me, I wasn't fat adapted, so I needed to be carb loading. And he said, okay, do this. Eat these, this kind of, like, you know, the night before for your carbs. What I didn't know at the time was that was going to be what I used as my fuel source for miles 24, 25, 26, like later in the race, right? Mm-hmm. What I ate the night before, because now it's going into my reserves And when I wake up in the morning and I eat something like, you know, Cheerios, Honey Nut Cheerios, now I have something, it's simple sugar, so I'm going to be able to burn that right away. So I get to mile six, I need to refuel. So I need some sort of new carbs, 30 grams of carbs some way, somehow. And then mile 12, mile 18, I need to be refueling, right? That's why they give you like gummy bears in the middle of a marathon, or oranges, stuff like that. Like gummy bear, when I got a gummy bear at mile 18, it was like I wanted to kiss the person that gave it to me. It was the best thing I ever had.
Yeah.
And then they give you like the lemonade, the real sugary stuff, because you're fueling off of that sugar. It's real quick. It's just, your body's burning it. It's not complex carbs. It's not sitting in your body in your reserves, right? Mm-hmm. Like pasta would, right? Like wheat pasta is going to be a complex. It's going to sit in your body. And then your body's going to tap into that later, your glycogen stores and whatever. I don't know. I'm sounding like I know what I'm talking about, but I don't. I'm just going off of what people tell me. So anyway, so your body's burning the simple sugars all through the race because you keep refueling. And then by the time you get to that last, you know, stretch, now your body's going to kick into those glycogen that you had the night before, and it's going to burn that as your – so I screwed it all up. I didn't do any of that right. I basically – like started eating Clif bars during the race, which was really bad because my body's not going to digest them.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't eat the right stuff the night before. I didn't ice bath properly. I didn't, you know, I'm running 10 miles a day for 7 days straight going. So anyway, if I think about what I could have done and what the result would have been, if I would actually just paid attention and focused more, I think it would have been a lot different.
Yeah.
So that 40 mile bike ride you did, as hard and as painful as it was, I think you could probably do like 80.
If I like prepared.
Take water. Yeah. But that's everyone, man. I think, you know, Goggins talks about this, that we put this like limitation on ourselves. So that I started the podcast basically asking you like, what do you really think you're capable of? To me, I don't know the answer to that, but I told my dad that I really want to do an Ironman at some point in my life. And he's like, don't you think you're a little old for that now? And I'm like, no, I'm not.
Back to the age thing, something I thought of earlier is, back to like professional athletes is, you know, the elite guys anyway. You know, guys come in the league in their 20s, out of college, and whatever sport it is. But most guys are at the elite stage of their career, and they're like early to mid 30s.
Yeah.
And that's like kind of – that's like pretty widely considered as like the prime. Like guys can obviously be very good before that. But in most cases, like the elite guys, the elite athletes, they're in their primes in early to mid-30s.
Yeah.
And so that, calling all the way back to the discussion of, like, you know, what, like, me thinking of myself now versus what I was, you know, whatever, 20 years ago, the idea of being too old to do something or whatever, most professional athletes that are performing still at high levels, like, this is their prime right now.
Yeah.
It's like, this is an age that is not like, you know, oh boy, I'm almost 40.
Yeah.
It's like, no, like, this is the time to kind of like lay the groundwork. In my case, I have to like relay the groundwork as opposed to like just continuing on a path. But like, now it's kind of like starting a path to take me into, you know, my 40s and everything to continue, you know, to just not deteriorate as I get older. Like, I kind of want to take the opposite approach of whatever the opposite of deteriorating is.
Vitality.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's funny because, like, my goal has always been to be a millionaire by 40, right? I actually listened to a guy that, he was his 40th birthday. He was a multi-billionaire, and he was talking about how he was up in the cabins, and they were all celebrating. They flew everyone in, and I'm thinking how it was. Chris Sacca, by the way, he's a billionaire, and he was just turning 40, and he was doing a podcast. Tim Ferriss and
Shark Tank. I think I saw him on Shark Tank.
Yeah, he's on Shark Tank. Yeah, so
involved in Uber or something. Anyway.
Yeah.
Anyways,
yeah, he's like an early investor in a lot of them. He's like a billionaire, and I'm thinking, like, that's my goal. I want to be a billionaire. You know, even in Awaken the Giant Within, he has you do visualization. Like, Tony Robbins actually asks you, how much money is enough? Like, what is the amount of money you want? And I came up with this number, $27 million. Like, I was like, $27 million, that's the number that I think I could actually get to. And I think that that's a number that would be like, basically give me the financial freedom I need. I don't need financial abundance. Like, I don't need jets, yachts. I could care less. I just need financial freedom where I can do what I want, when I want, with whoever I want, and basically spend my time doing everything I want, which is kind of ironic because I don't have anywhere near $27 million, but I do that now that I have my own business.
Yeah, right.
So I train all day long. And I spend all day with my family and friends. It's pretty awesome. So lesson learned there. But anyway, the whole 40-year millionaire goal, I'm looking at it now, and I'm thinking, you know, like for my dad, right? I always wanted to make my dad proud, and my mom proud, right? So it would it be would I be prouder of running an Ironman by 40 than making $27 million? The answer is yes, 100%. And then take a step further and say, okay, what if I were to die at 41, right? Or some, you know, some age after 40, would I want my daughter to remember me as a person that ran an Ironman or a person that made $27 million?
Yeah.
I'd want her to remember me as the person that ran the Ironman. And even if I don't ever do it, going that path, right? Working hard in the gym, trying to better myself, trying to, you know, run. I've never actually ran a 5K. Trying to run the races just over and over and over again, pushing myself, basically living a life where you're trying to always grow and be and, you know, contribute back. Like, that's what I learned. Like, even contribution back to people is so much more important than all the stuff that I thought. Like, I think about all the time with my career. Like, I'm always like, I wonder if my dad's proud of me for this, this, and this. All my dad cares about is my relationship with my daughter.
Like, yeah.
That's all he cares about.
What do you care about? As it turns out,
yeah,
you probably, when it boils down to it, you probably just care about your relationship with your daughter.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Yeah.
100%. Yeah. And it's just like, but that's the stuff that I need to focus on. Like, I make him more proud when he sees me with my daughter than I do when I'm talking about, like, how I got this big thing at work or this salary or whatever. And I'm spending all my time trying to showcase that shit. And it's like, all he really wants to see is me, like, you know, taking my daughter to go for walks, you know, and, you know, and when I tell him about that kind of stuff, it's a totally different story. So it's funny because got super, like, sidetracked in life, chasing all the wrong shit, you know, which is okay, but I don't know, kind of came full circle.
Yeah, I think that's...
I still want $27 million, so...
That's what I mean. So it's not, like, stupid shit because, it could change a lot of things and also give you something to chase, but it's interesting how, like, as life moves along, how kind of, like, your priorities change. Yeah.
Yeah, 100%.
Big time. So, anyway.
You want to wrap it up?
Whatever.
We're, like, 130 here. Oh, we might be. Oh, no, we're not that bad. 116. We can wrap it up. We can do another one. Random show.
Yeah.
Matt and Chad.
That was fun.
Training partners. I had to get Jared on the podcast, too. We'll talk about some lifting shit.
Love that dude.
Yeah. He's the man.
I got to hear some stories.
Yeah.
That dude.
SWAT team.
SWAT team.
I'll tell you some stories about them moving. Did you hear about, like, so a SWAT team showed up, like, all his boys to help him move?
Yeah.
I wasn't there. I was running my 10 and a half miles I was running, you know, because I went the wrong way. I thought they lived on the back side. They lived on the front side. So by the time I got to the back side, I'm way far away and I'm on 10 miles and I'm ready to die. You know, like, I'm just hurt so bad. And they're on the front side of Walnut.
You ran there.
Motherfucker. Yeah, from my house. That was my 10 and a half mile day.
I mean, I could have given you a ride, bro. What are you doing?
Well, I'm like, that'll be a good run because they told me to live across the street from MJ. So I get to – I didn't actually get – I missed the get off the trail. So I went all the way through the tunnel, all the way to the Five Points intersection. I had to come back up. And then it's like, make a right on the Logan Road because I finally MapQuested it. I'm like, oh, I'm close to MJ's. I got to MapQuest it.
You MapQuested?
Well.
Do you have a printer with you?
No.
Print it out?
Yeah, Apple, whatever. Google Maps. So they told me they live right across the street from MJ's. And I'm like, okay, perfect. You know, so I'm thinking they live in right across the street from MJ's. They just meant the neighborhood. They meant like Walden Woods.
Yeah.
So I get to... right close to MJ's and I'm like, okay, I just got to find out which one it is now. So I put in the address and it's like, oh, go up Logan Road. I'm like, Logan Road's like a mountain. I'm on mile like 9 at this point.
Yeah.
So now I'm climbing Logan Road. And it's funny because one of the guys going to help him move passed me. And then I showed up. He's like, dude, I would have never dreamed in a million years you were coming here. It was like 90 degrees that day. So finally I get up this hill and I'm like, I gotta call Katie or something. These people are like, they live miles away from here. Like, I'm never gonna make it. Luckily, Walden Woods, I could get through some of the back roads, and Katie picked me up like 100 feet from his house. Drove there, we get there, and they're done. Everything's done. Luckily, because I couldn't walk. And the whole team, like, I guess this team of SWAT guys showed up. They had a whole, they had a lot of stuff. They packed this truck better than I've seen. I mean, they should get a job as moving company. And then the same thing happened on the way back. Like, the whole team, different group of guys shows up, unpacks the whole thing, like, talking 30 minutes an hour, something like that. It's crazy.
Operation.
I would be in the way of those guys. You know what I mean? Like, you know, I'll compete. I'll go run some shit with you. I'll lift some weights with you. I'll go hard in a fitness studio. But on that kind of stuff, that's not my realm of the world. That's like me working on PowerPoints. Like, just get out of my way. Design PowerPoints like a bat. You know, like, I draw pretty pictures. Get out of my way. These guys, like, just, yeah, I would have been in their way.
That makes total sense. I don't know anything about the SWAT team, but I assume the way they operate is just so methodical, and you know, somebody probably takes the lead. Everybody just has their own job. They do their own job. That's wild. 100%. But I got to hear some stories.
Yeah,
from Jared. Love to hear some stories.
Oh yeah, man, that'll be an interesting one for sure. We'll get them on.
Yeah.
Anyway, we'll wrap up. Thanks, guys. Thanks, Matt.
Thanks, buddy.